Nicole Whitney News for the Soul.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights. Life-changing spotlight moments of her empowering talk radio network. Founded in January 1997. To hear the full shows totally free, visit newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com, where we've been broadcasting unparalleled moments with teachers on the leading edge of the human consciousness journey since January 1997. Go to newsforthesoul.com to find out more. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Get ready. It's time for News for the Soul. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. All found at newsforthesoul.com. And now, here's your host and the founder of News for the Soul, Nicole Whitney.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nicole with News for the Soul. We're here doing newsforthesoul.com. And what better news than the story we're going to hear today? How would you like to win all the time, every contest you enter? Well, this is what Helene has experienced, so we're going to find out about her story, which started a long time ago. Helene Hatzold, find out about her amazing lifetime of winning. I mean, we're talking not just little things. We're talking about, you know, not coupons, but winning a house and trips all over the place to the point where it actually got boring to do so. So can't imagine how many times you have to win a trip to Europe to get bored of that, but we'll find out. Today, all that and more, News for the Soul. If you miss any of the show, newsforthesoul.com. Back in two.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And we are back. I'm Nicole, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. What better uplifting can we do than bringing you a story from someone who has won nearly every contest she's ever entered? How would you like to do that? Talk about law of attraction there. And we're talking about a long-standing history of large prizes to the point of where winning free trips to Europe apparently got boring. So we want to find out how we can experience that as well and how we can apply that to whatever we're living in our lives. Helene Hatzold is my guest for the rest of this hour, and I'm excited about talking to her and introducing you to her. She has worked with the likes of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale and Joseph Murray, authoring books of Power of Subconscious Mind, helping Jose Silva set up Silva Method Mind Training Centers over the years. Quite the interesting history. Let's find out her story. Helene, welcome to News for the Soul.
Well, hi there.
How are you doing?
Great.
I would imagine you're always doing great.
yes. It's a busy time all the time for me.
So where does your story, I know you've probably told it a kabillion times over many years, but I just rediscovered you recently via the internet. I think it was through email I got from Joe Vitale recently or something, and I thought, oh my goodness, listen to this. So this is new for me and my listeners, some of them perhaps, and I'd love to hear your story.
Well, should we start at the beginning?
That's an excellent
question. And do you have about 20 or 30 hours?
Perhaps a more condensed version, but beginning
well,
is good.
Well, yes. But I know the a group from Malaysia came over to do a DVD, and we sat here 8 hours interviewing me. And that was just it could have gone on forever because everything in my life, I feel, has been a daring adventure or nothing. I think I set this up. Really. Let's start at the beginning. Yes, I was a little happy homemaker with three children. And, you know, we our needs are met mostly, but then we have a lot of wants. And that's when I started entering contests. That's originally when it started. Actually, I had read the book, The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. And he said one thing that intrigued me, said you can have anything you want provided you know what it is and see yourself as already having it. There's no doubts, just see yourself as already having it. I think I meditated on that and I thought, that just is just too simple. I'm a person that always has to investigate everything. Well, anyway, nevertheless, that night my husband came in and we were talking and I said, you know, I read this book and I'm fascinated about what we can win if we want to. We can just apply this to anything. And he was reading the paper and he said, he said, okay, why don't you win me an outboard motor? And he was reading the paper, and the Evinrude outboard motor had a contest. He had to write 25 words or less why you take Coca-Cola on outings. And I said, and he says, and then you can win us an outboard motor. And that night, I was so serious, and you want to say, I don't know, but I went into my room, and I sat there, and I thought, I pictured my husband sitting in a boat with a six-pack of Cokes. And that's all I did. That was my picture. And then I wrote this article. I mean, I wrote the 25 words. My husband loved to go fishing on weekends by himself. He was in a very, very stressful work. And this was his way to release. And all the children were too young to go with him. And he just had an old paddle boat. And that's just for a couple of hours. But he wanted this outboard motor. So now, temporarily, I became him. And I sat there, and I said, I'm a lone wolf fisherman. Cokes are my silent partners. They contribute no yakety-yak when called upon. And that was 25 words. I send it in. I showed it to him. I send it in, and I said, I wonder how long it's going to take him to let us know that you won. It was exactly 10 days later when a local representative called and said, you won your outboard motor. Well, see, that was the start of it. And then I thought,
Before you go on, how long ago was that? When was that?
Oh, honey, that was in the 40s when they were having a lot of the 25 words or less, 50 words or less, and a few sweepstakes. But today, there's mostly sweepstakes. But anyway, mm-hmm. That's originally how I got started.
Well, I want to ask you a couple of questions before you move on about just the process, because I'm like you. I like to kind of scientifically break it down. So
yes.
When you went in and you pictured it, and you were, as you said, you became him, and you were in the boat, and you were picturing the thing. And how long did you hold that vision or the picture?
I don't recall. I just, I will say, during the day, when I was driving the car or vacuuming or doing mundane things, I would see the end result. So
you did revisit the picture.
Yes, yes. This is the reason that I wrote the article. And I think it's very, very simple for everyone to now understand. And I call it SPEC, S-P-E-C. And what it means is selected, projected, expected, collected. And that's the formula that I have used, all my life. I mean, you know, right now, I'm not interested in material things. I have everything I possibly want. And I'm not hoarding, or I'm not in the power or greed mode. I like to use it in other areas of projecting particular things that I want with people, telepathy, et cetera. And I'm still using this technique, and it's still working.
Well, this is why that it was so exciting, because it's, you know, it can be, as you say, applied to anything. It's kind of the mechanics of the consciousness, and you know, we talk about on News for the Soul, we've talked about this kind of thing for years in many different ways, and getting closer to really understanding what that means and what our potential is and what our true nature is what we're always striving for here. So one of the big questions that comes up, I still want to hear, you know, more of the linear story. I know I sort of threw you off off track there, but I wanted to break it down, the process, because you know, the biggest question is how you stay out of the doubt creeping in.
Okay, you can only think of one thing at a time. And there are several techniques until you get out of that mode. I mean, we're all in different emotions. We know this. But one of the things is this rubber band technique. One woman said, I'm always negative. I'm around negative people, and I work in an office negative. And I said, well, just wear a rubber band. And the minute that they're discussing something negative and you're now then associating with it, snap your rubber band and get back to something positive. And I said, all of a sudden, it becomes a way of life with you. And everything that is, limiting or negative, I call it a learning experience. I say, oh, you're just going through a learning experience. And what you need to do after it's over with, I mean, there's always a good, positive end result that you set this up. You know, you create your future. Why did you set it up? Well, okay, if you think it's negative, then it's a learning experience, and then it can be over with. Now let's get on with life and be positive, uplifting. And so this is one of the techniques that you can use. But remember, you can only think of one thing at a time, and you're in control of your thinking. So if you let other people influence you, then it's something that you need to address. And
so it's literally replace it with something.
Yes, definitely.
Well, let's get back to your story. I know I interrupted there because I've been dying to ask you so many questions, so I'll try to be
You're not dying to ask.
Get through it.
You're interested in See, I would correct you if you were in my environment, you know.
Okay, I'm living to ask you questions. Good point. See, this is a good point because we do to pay attention to our thoughts and words.
Yes, everything we say, everything is energy, and we're projecting energy in our thoughts, and words become thoughts and so forth, and you're creating that. So that's a no-no in my book. Okay.
I stand corrected. Okay, so you've won the outboard motor. Now hubby is going, you must have had his attention by then.
Yes. And so I said, well, what do we want to win next? And I was so naive, no kidding. I was so naive. And this book, I mean, Vincent Peale, you know, had a radio show, and he had all these books at the in the library. And I thought, this man knows everything. And so he was my mentor at that time. And so I just went ahead and, okay, he's right. Now what do we want to win? And as I said, we had three young children. And I said, okay, what would we wanted to, and now I'm getting the children interest. And so my daughter said she wanted a new bicycle. And I said, well, let's go ahead and see what contest is giving away a bicycle. Now, remember, at that time, there were lots and lots of promotional things. And at the grocery store, they had a bulletin board with entry blanks, you know, all advertising their product, Nestle tea and Del Monte ketchup, et cetera. And they usually had 25 words or less, 50 words or less, or what, just sometimes just to name something. And so I get all these little contests, and then I look for, now let's see, what she wants, a twin bicycle. Oh, here, Nestle's chocolate has a contest, and you have to name a pony, and the winner wins twin bicycles and a pony. So the three of us, the children and I, sat there, and I said, let's name a pony, and let's get Pamela, my daughter, get her a bicycle. And they got very serious, you know, playing a game. And I said, what should we call them? And they were thinking, I wrote down Brownie and this and this and this. And all of a sudden, and he said, my son said, well, he bucks. And so, and it's, you know, so we wrote down him buck too. And then he prances. So we called him Prance Charming. And we send in the article Prance Charming. And that's what won her twin bicycle. But we would, again, said there was something that when we started this project, one of the things Peale said, don't tell anybody, don't mention it to anybody, because many people are negative and they can nullify your good energy, and then you think it's your idea, and it's not necessarily a failure, but it's a delay in results if you inject any negative in your end result. And so that was very important to me. We don't tell anybody anything. We just play this game, and she wants a swim bicycle. Let's win it for her. And now, yeah, we won the bicycle. And then the next thing was, what else do you want? Okay, to make a long story short, we won every year after I had what I called the formula. We would never, when we planned our vacation, we wanted to go to Disney World. So we won a trip to World. We wanted to go to the World's Fair in New York. We won trips. We won, you name it, kid, and I'll claim it. Because we became so proficient in this that I then, locally, was known as using witchcraft. And I changed that, and I said, no, it's not witchcraft, it's wishcraft. And anybody can do this. And I was very, very, very open when I would get letters or telephone calls, people asking me to help them. And I would simply say, well, these are the rules, here it is. And that's when I wrote the book, The Name It and Claim It Game, with maneuvers for witchcraft. And that to date now, probably over 3 million or so books I've sold. And
wow.
That's it. I mean, that was the beginning of it.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And then, you know, along the way, so much fun. I mean, you could project something and then you could anticipate. And it was so delightful because on my 40th birthday, I had read that Paris, France was a city of romance and love and light and so forth. And I announced to my husband, on my 40th birthday, I want to be in Paris, France, sitting at a sidewalk cafe, drinking wine with you. And I wrote a very offbeat article. I had this, this sense of humor that sometimes doesn't make sense. But what I wrote was, I want to go to Paris, France, because I'm curious to find out if a poop couple with 3 kiddos can recapture the rapture of springtime ecstasy in their fat 40 frustrated years. I send that was 50 words. I send it off to 2-3 different sponsors because many of the sponsors were offering the same prizes. So I could use my entry over and over. I didn't care who gave me the trip. I saw the end result, and that was it. And so, the first indication that I'd won a prize was I wound up winning a Hammond electric organ. And we got a big charge out of that because I told my husband, this started in January, and my birthday was going to be the 1st of June. And in March, I win this Hammond electric organ, and I said, well, I guess the judges read my entry, and they decided that I needed physical therapy, and playing the organ would be very good therapy. And we just had a fun thing with it, and it was almost May sometime. About the 15th of May, when I got the notice that I was being considered a prize. You know, usually they investigate you, and to investigate, they want to find out if you're related to the sponsor or to the judging firm. And, and then you have to have an affidavit for that because the contests and prizes, sweepstakes are on the very, very on the up and up. So I wouldn't have any qualms about entering because, they don't need any bad publicity. So this went on, and we won. I went to Paris, France, and one of the things, my son went a trip to New York, and then the Dude Ranches we went to. I mean, every year it was, let's go someplace else. And it was a family fun thing. But
Did you win every time, or did it come in different ways, or, was it a general intention, or did you win every contest?
No, I would. I won every contest that I wanted, every item I wanted. But in the interim, I was logging and writing a journal at that time. 1 month, I won a prize every day, every cotton picking day.
Wow.
It was, you know, it was fry pans, it was appliances, it was musical instruments, it was just different things. But I never lost sight of the fact of the big thing that I really wanted to win, because not every contest I entered did I win. I waited until, I mean, if I didn't win in one contest, I would send that same entry in if it was, you know, creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
I did this just on an ongoing basis, and I did this also with sweepstakes. When the World's Fair in 1964 and 65, they had the World's Fair in New York, and I stopped there for a couple of days because my son won a trip there with a Lindy Star Sapphire contest, and that was fabulous. And then we were on our way to Paris. This was on my 40th birthday. And while we were at the World's Fair, the Formica Corporation had built this fabulous home, and at that time, God, that was $50,000, valued at $50,000. And I was so looking forward to going to France, Paris, that I never even went to that World's Fair house. And the only time I remember that they had it, I came back. And as contesters do, every state or a local area has what we call, well, they have contest clubs. And I came, and I belonged to this Dallas club, and we called ourselves the Compatriots. And we were always sharing entry blanks and ideas, and every time we would meet, we would go around the room, and each one would stand up and say, oh, this month I won a month's supply of gas. I won $50 grocery at this store. I won this trip here, etc. And we were competing. I mean, it was fun. And we were very, very supportive. Well, while I was came back and told the girls about my trip to New York and then to Paris, and one gal said, well, did you see the Formica house at the World's Fair? And I said, no, I missed that completely. It was so awesome, and there were so many things we were interested in. No, I didn't. And she said, well, it's still running for another 2 weeks. And locally, some of the builders are using Formica. What you have to do is go ahead and see the Formica home and sign. There is a signing there, and then they send in all of the entries from around the entire United States to a judging firm, and that judging firm then chooses a name. And everybody, I mean, there were millions of entries in it because the prize went on. I mean, the contest went on for a year during the World's Fair. Well, I said, well, where's a local place that I can enter? And the gal, well, this was in Garland, which was about 38 miles from where I lived in Irving. And I thought, well, okay, this was at night, and I thought, the next morning I will go and enter this, see this for Micah home. Sounded exciting, a new home, you know. And my friends that lived locally, I called up Jessie, and I said, let's go over and register at this Formica house. And she said, no, I just washed my hair, and it was raining and drizzling, and it was very overcast, and it really wasn't, it was a gloomy day. And then I called another friend. No, she's having her carpets shampooed. No, she can't go. And, you know, she said, it's already rigged, and they know who they want, and this was negative. So I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, it just felt like somebody pushed me in the car. And the next thing I know, I'm down the highway, and I'm in Garland, and I find the house, and I walk up to this Formica house and get in there, sit there, and look at everything in it. Sign my name, my husband's name, and I thought, okay, yes, now I want a new house. This is a house I want. And I signed my husband's name, my name. Took an entry blank, went home that night, and told my husband, well, our next prize is we're going to win this house. And I said, you might as well start doing, we want to do a schematic of the house, and I want to design the interior. And see, my husband's always been very, very supportive. So we sat there and we designed the house. And it was a fun thing. Let's do this. Here's the boys' room. Let's have twin bathrooms here and everything we possibly wanted. And this was, and that was it. The contest was over with. I'd had my entries in, etc. It took 6 weeks later, and probably it took that long because they were gathering boxes from the around the country that had Formica homes and displaying their Formica products. And that night, I am actually at the club in Dallas, and my husband called and said, well, somebody just called from New York and asked about the Formica house. And I said, you gave him all the right answers. He's yes, yes. And that was it. But let me back up for a minute. This, after I got home from entering the contest and I was there by myself, I was adamant that my husband had to come over and see that house. I said, if they investigate us, we both need to know about their Formica, the new things that they're adding, like molding, and molding was one of the main things that they were playing, because that was a new product they were plugging. And do you know, on Saturday morning, I said, let's get up, and we're going to over to Garland, and you're going to look at that house. So when they call and say, yes, you saw it, although I put it in my name, but what he would answer the phone. Well, so this is what happened. He answered the phone. He said, yes, my wife and I saw the Formica home, and we were impressed with this, et cetera. And that was an investigation over the phone. And now this again, it's another 4 or 5 weeks later, and I'm still visualizing the house. Now we're driving around because we're going to put it on a lot. We find a suitable lot, and we're waiting. I mean, what's taking them so long? And that's the morning. I woke up and I said, they're going to let us know we won today. And the children were all going off to school. And I said, listen, kids, when you get home, they're going to let us know we won this house. For God's sake, act surprised. They expect it. And just, you know, this was a fun thing with me.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights. Life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And my husband said, well, you sure? And I said, yeah, they're coming today. And he said, well, I think I'll stay home from work today. And I said, great. So he's in bed reading the paper. I go to the local bakery to get some bakery goods and plug in the coffee pot. We're waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's 12 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock. He said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, we won it. They just have to let us know. And about 2 o'clock, I got a phone call, and they said, Mrs. Hadsell, we're the president of Formica, and the company that sponsored it. And we'd like to come out and talk to you about something. And but we want your husband to be there, and I assume he's working. And I said, well, yeah, but he took the day off. Well, is he ill? I said, no, he just happened to want to take the day off, so he's here. So they came 20 minutes later, and now they talked, and they were a little, you know, made small talk, and we had coffee and so forth. And I was just as antsy as I could be, you know. I thought, when are they going to get to this? And, you know, I had to act surprised because they expected. So I squealed, and, you know, like they do on some of these shows, that the price is right when people get ecstatic about winning something because they expected it. So that's how I won the house. And,
Wow. Yes,
many, 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 many trips. My sons won trips to Europe, and they were very, 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 educational, and it was just a lot of fun. So then...
No, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, after I had won everything possibly could win, I wrote this book, and then I got on... after that, I was working with Jose, and then I learned so many, many, many how powerful the mind is, and had confirmation on what I was doing by projecting and selecting and projecting, expecting, collecting, all of these things. The mind does this. I mean, when we're focused on something, we're sending energy for that end result. And if we don't interfere, it has to come to us. That's just a cosmic law as far as I'm concerned. So everything is energy. Our thoughts are energy. This now fascinated me. So I got on another kick, I would call it. I wanted to learn everything I could about self-awareness. Everything. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? Why am I doing this? Do I have a hang up here? And that's when I really got serious about self-awareness and finding out about myself. So that went into another facet of a daring adventure for me. And I used the same techniques when I had an interest in something. So,
and that's kind of where I was going with it well, because, you know, it's a lot more than frying pans that we're talking about here. And because the law, as you say, I mean, it's got to be applicable to anything, right? And and if you can do it and some other people can do it, we obviously are all able to do it.
Oh, yes, and, definitely.
So the first question comes with limits, if any. You know, what have you applied besides contests with this?
Oh, well, after I worked with Jose and I then learned the program, somebody said, how many times did you sit through the lecture? And I'd say 300-400 times. And they'd think, well, you're an idiot. And I said, no, I was his PR. And every time he had a class or anybody had a class, I would register and be there and greet him, et cetera, and do the promotions and things. So I got to know him so well and then sit in every class for 2-3 years. So it would, I mean, I knew it to such a degree that I could give it to you verbatim on what he presented in each class, and that's getting to know the subject. Now, when I got into that area, I then had sort of notoriety because of my success in entering contests, and so I was invited to go to different areas around the United States, and I hadn't really had that much. I mean, there were many exciting places I wanted to see, and so they would contact me, and I would just sit there and say, huh, I'd like to go to New York and do a workshop in New York. And this was very interesting because one of the soap opera queens there, what was her name, I think, June Graham, in one of the operas, soap operas, daily operas, called me and said, would I come to New York and present my program on self-awareness? So I got to New York, and then I wanted to, hey, I think I would like to go to San Francisco. I've never been there. And then I'd get a call from San Francisco. I would see it as an end result, and it worked for me in that area. And then all of a sudden, I am, as a child, I had sort of pushed back that area. I was able to see in another dimension.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights. Life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And everybody has this capability, but it's dormant, or they're frightened with it, or they're talked out of it, which I was talked out of it. My mother said, you have a vivid imagination, or you lie. And then I just let that be. But I could see people in another dimension, and some were almost as solid as I was. Well, this fascinated me, and I took a lot of time trying to work out what's going on here. And all of a sudden, I could see people, I could communicate. And then I thought, just a minute, some people are coming with messages. Some people are aberrations when there is something serious. And then there are thought forms that people create. I was listening to people. I was discussing this particular brain that I was very serious with. And all of a sudden, I made a decision that many, many people that are lonesome or negative or whatever create a thought form. And the thought form, they work back and forth with this thought form. But how can you prove something like that? So what I did was I projected that I would have this answer. And the answer came when I went to England. There's a place in England, 34 Belgrave Square. It's called the Spiritual Frontier. And they, what they do is they train medium, talk to the dead and so forth, which I wasn't interested in. But I thought, I want to see if there's any credibility to this. I went to England. My husband went with me. I sat in seance rooms for 3 weeks studying who's coming to seances, what are people learning, and then sitting there downstairs and talking and listening to them. And that's when I made an evaluation, and boy, did I learn something there. I learned that most people that went there, they had their loved ones had died, and the medium was reassuring them that their loved ones are waiting for them, etc. And they would appear in this situation where I was, and the medium would convey the message to the people that were there. And I thought, thought form, this is a thought form. This is a thought form, because from the information that I gathered. But one day, there was a, and this would take me an hour to discuss because it's so long to get the end result, I will say. I was very surprised when a woman that I sat beside came in just as a, just to spend the afternoon. She was on a tour, and somebody told her to come by and see this place. And I got acquainted with her, and the medium said, "Is Roberta here?" And she raised her hands. "I have a message from you, from your aunt." She said, "Your mother is with us now, and you need to take care of the body and so forth." And this is held in this seance room. And this girl just was discombobulated. And after the medium told her, in essence, that the mother was dead. So she ran out of the room. I went with her. We went downstairs. And she said, "Why would people be that way?" And I knew she was then apprehensive. And I said, "Well, why don't you call?" "Well," she said, "my mother's fine. I left my mother. She's fine." And I said, "Well, why don't you call her and have confirmation?" Because sometimes these are idiots, and they are seeking sensationalism and trying to sort of soften the blow for her. And she called, and there was no answer. And I said, and she said, "Well, we live in the apartment building." And I said, "Well, why don't you call one of your friends or who has a key to your mother's, and they can have them call you here downstairs, and we'll wait and see. Your mother may be out walking the dog or whatever." And she did. She called the man that took care of the building, and his wife was a good friend of the mother. So the wife went up there and opened the door, and the mother had died in her sleep. So she called our place in England, and of course the girl had to go back home, take care of the arrangements. But her aunt had appeared in the seance room, and her aunt was no longer in the physical. So that really and truly got me to thinking. And I came back, and I did a lot of talk shows at that time because there were so many things happening. And one of the people, I don't even recall who heard me, and said, "Hey, I want to take you to Russia, and I want you to present a paper on your ghost thought forms and aberrations, because we have not had this kind of investigation, and we'd like for you to join us there." And it was a psychotronic congress held in 72 in Moscow. And then I got to go to Russia for 2 weeks and present my paper. And, well, I mean, this can go on and on. There was one exciting venture right after the other.
Wow.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And I'm still having and I wrote a book. I called it The Confessions of an 83-year-old sage. I wrote this 2 years ago, and no holes are barred. Every story in there is a personal experience, and then I have a technique that if you want to pursue it, you can go ahead, and this is what worked for me, and that's where I'm at.
Wow.
And still, every day there's something. The Wall Street Journal just contacted me last week and wanted to do an article on my winning. And then the Sun, national publication, you know, on the newsstands, National Enquirer, et cetera. There's a publication called The Sun. I send them the spec article because I wrote to the editor and I said, how does this grab you? I've read enough doom and gloom on your front page. How about something uplifting for these people that are going through a crisis of not having jobs, et cetera, and pressed and all this? I said, let's give them something to look forward to. I'd like for you to publish my article on spec. 2 days later, I got an email and said, send me your picture and we're going to run the story. This was a couple of weeks ago. I haven't had any more confirmation that their article's out yet, but I'm certain that they may put it there in a little corner, but I'm looking for the front page of that Sun magazine. So we can get this message out that, hey, wait a minute, you kids aren't using your mind to its full potential. Shame on you. You have it there. There's so much in there. I mean, there's just so much that you can do instead of doom and gloom and pity party and drama queen, et cetera, you know. So there you got it.
I mean, this brings up the question, like you mentioned the front page and we kind of chuckle, but, I mean, can you not use the technique and make it happen?
Well, yeah, that's my end result, Kit. That's my end result now, and here I told the whole world. But it hasn't happened yet. It takes, you know, it's not instantaneous. I'm not a nut. I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to happen overnight. But when you have enough energy on something, then it has to come to you. It's just a law. That's all. The only way I can explain it. It's a law, and I've done it so much, so often, with so many people. I actually, after I got off the lecture circuit, which was real, real exciting, and we had so many case histories that were phenomenal, really phenomenal, that happened. I could write 20 or 30 books, but I encourage the people that had these experiences, write your own story. But when I came back, I decided, now, with my book sales, initially, I had seen, envisioned a nice center here in Alvarado on the outskirts of Fort Worth, on about, I'd say, 20 miles from Fort Worth. And I was at Love This Lake area, and I had envisioned a center where people would come and take my classes. That's what I wanted. And when I got book royalties from a young man that took my book and put it on direct mail, he had a vision to go to India. He had a vision I'd make a million and he'd make a million. Well, this happened, and so I was able to build a center out here and live here. It's only 5 acres. It's very unpretentious because I just, this is what I wanted. So I had people from all over this cotton-picking world. I had the ambassador from Trinidad come to spend a week. I had people, every country came just from reading my book and wanting to spend time here for a week or, well, most of them, 2, 3, 4 days to make it worthwhile. And so that's what I continued to do for the last 10 years. Was just having people and sharing experiences. But in the interim, I was invited to Peru, and this was in, I think, 86, and I had planned how I went there and what transpired, and I thought, well, I'll be there a week. Well, I was there 2.5 months, and I was counseling people from the embassy, from all the affluent, from all walks of life, and it was, well, it's just been very, very exciting.
Now, how did you, I mean, this is a much more diverse than sort of law of attraction, what you focus on expands kind of thing. How did you get into sort of the intuitive realm?
Everything that we want to do is desire. Desire is a criteria for everything. When you have a desire and you project the desire, you can use the spec to do this. I have the desire to know more about myself. I have the desire to be in the presence of a person, place, or thing that will teach me or demonstrate this desire of knowing myself. And that's why I went to Peru, really, because I didn't even want to go. I did not project that. That was one thing I did not project. But I did project that I would be in a place or with people where I could learn more about myself. And this is what higher intelligence decided. Well, you got to go to Peru, kid, because when you get over there, you're going to have so many experiences that you're not even going to question all these aspects about self-awareness that you wanted. And that made it so exciting. When these people would come to me, and I'm talking about the affluent, they'd come in their armored cars, and they were paranoid over there. They'd have these people come in, their guards come in, and the entrepreneur that invited me initially, he heard me when I was one of the key speakers with Jose. After I went into doing my own lecturing and workshops, etc., Jose and I remained close friends, and periodically I would be invited to be one of the key speakers at his international convention. And this young man from Peru was there and heard me lecture, and he was adamant that I come to Peru and spend time with him. And I said, no, I have no desire to go there. That's not on my schedule, not interested, and continued to try to discourage him, and I just let it go. And it was 2 years later, after he met me, is the morning that I'm busy here, and I'm wanting to go to Sedona and find out, hey, there's got to be some good information there with vortexes and the people that are frequenting this place. And that was my goal. But instead, out of the blue, he called and said, you've got to be here by this particular date. I'll pay all your expenses. I will send you to Machu Picchu. What do you want? But you have got to be here. And something intuitively said, must go. And I said, well, my passport's in order. Call me, and we'll talk tomorrow. So that's what happened.
I understand what you mean about Peru, though. I can tell you I've never been the same since that one either.
Yeah.
Quite dramatic. Wow. My experience was beyond the sort of, you know, tourist areas. We went into the middle of nowhere to check at Kiro, and I filmed UFOs and had all kinds of bizarre communication going on. But now this, all of this conversation that we're talking about, this whole, I mean, it's just been an amazing adventure in your life. What's the limit? What else have you applied these laws to? Like, have you changed something physically within yourself, you know, health-wise, or, you know, where are the limits that we can apply this to that you've experienced, if there are any?
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
I don't know. I'm 85 years old, and when I have a physical challenge, because we're subjected to the environment, to the pollution, to other energy, I don't like to. I love my space here. Because I'm by myself, and I love being by myself, but there are times that I need to get out in the public. And when you're out in the public, and this is not paranoid, you're picking up energy, subtle energies from other people. And it's not your situation. You're just open, and you're picking up, and then you have to rationalize and analyze, who does this belong to me? It doesn't belong to me. And I went through that phase where I knew that if someone was thinking about me and they had a physical challenge, I would pick them up mentally, and I would have a challenge, and I would think it was mine. And I would call them, or they would call me, and I would say, what's the matter with your knee? My gracious. And then they would tell me. I mean, this was their problem, not mine. But that's the way energy works. And so you have to be very discerning and very, very tuned in and put an auric field around you on a continuing basis to protect this ball of energy. You don't need all those outside influences. Sometimes you open yourself and it has to be reinforced. So it's been very, very interesting. I don't know how.
Have you ever applied this law to, you know, a physical challenge that came up for you that was yours?
Yes, I did. I have a doctor from another dimension that comes to me and tells me what I'm supposed to be doing. And I wrote a whole story about that one. And it worked. Yeah, it worked. I made this physical doctor that I was having challenges, real, real challenges of elimination and urinating and so forth. And when I got this physical doctor, and he said, well, you have to now, you let this go, you have to go to a, no, my spiritual doctor said, you have to go to a physical doctor to have it balanced, because you're still in a physical. And I didn't care for that, but he says, one thing I want you to know, everything's going to be fine. Even at that age, I was 69, said, always throughout this entire ordeal, you have a sense of humor. And a sense of humor with this, okay, I go to this doctor, and he does, takes x-rays and things, and I come back for his evaluation, and he tells me that I have this mammoth tumor, a growth there in between. Well, someplace in the anatomy, it had to be removed, but it looks like there's, it's cancerous because there's so much other indications around it, and he couldn't perform the surgery. I had to go to an oncologist. So I was in, over in Dallas, I went to this surgeon, got into his office. Now, I take along my pictures that he took of me, x-ray pictures. I get there, and this young doctor greets me, and he's got these pictures up. Now he's trying to show me, and he said, see this mass here? And I said, yeah, is it a boy or a girl? And he looked at me, and what do you mean? I said, is it a boy or a girl? Well, of course, then immediately thought I'm having mental problems. I was trying to do a joke, you know? And I said, he said, Mrs. Hadsell, this is serious. And I said, lighten up, lighten up. Don't you ever read the National Enquirer? Space aliens are coming down, impregnating us all the time. And, I mean, he looked at me like, wow. And I said, joke time, joke time. Now, this is how stupid it was, but I made this whole thing into a joke, an absolute joke. And then when he said to me, you're going to have to consent to have blood because at your age, we have always problems of losing too much blood and we have to sometimes transfusions. I said, well, I'm glad you told me that because I can stop the bleeding. And he said, what? I said, well, you've heard of mind over matter. See, this is a technique we were given in the Silva training, mind over matter. I said, well, I'll stop the bleeding for you. And now he knows that I'm crazy. He thinks there's got to be something mentally wrong with me. And I said, yeah, I will. And then he said, I'll do this in, well, we'll set it up in about, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks. I said, no, you won't. You're doing, this was a Friday, and I said, you're doing this Monday morning. I said, I have to be at a convention in Laredo in 3 weeks, and I'm one of the key speakers, and I can't let Jose down. And now again, he said, I can't do this. And I said, don't just sit there. Get on the telephone and make it happen. He gets on the phone because he needs another doctor in surgery and the anesthetist and the operating room, etc. And within 15 minutes, he has me scheduled for Monday to have surgery because I want to get it over with. And that was it. And then I get in there, and Monday morning, I spend the night there. They have a hotel there at that particular hospital, my husband and I. And I get in there, and when I wake up from all of the surgery anesthetist, I've got the anesthetist, and I've got the other doctor, and the nurses all, and my husband standing around my bed. And the anesthetist said, I just want to know one thing. How did you stop the bleeding? He said, you didn't bleed. And so anyway, these are things like, I don't know what limit you have or what limits you put on yourself. I don't know. But when I met Paul Twitchell, have you ever heard of Ekankar, the ancient science? Okay. I knew Paul personally, and when he came, I never solicited him, came to my home to meet me, and so did Dr. Joseph Murphy, Powers of the Subconscious Mind. They came to Irving to meet me, and so I had nothing to do with it, but I was to learn from these people, and I think that's how it was set up. But anyway, Paul was saying that his guide or his mentor or whatever was in the Himalayas, and he was 300 years old, and while he was sitting there with my husband and my friend Ellen, and she brought him to meet me that night because he was going to have a lecture in Dallas, and I wasn't going to go. I had no intention of going to his lecture because he was charging $50 for 3 hours, and I said, that's ludicrous, not going. And when he got off the plane, he said, he wants to meet me. And she brought him to my home. This was at 9 at night. And while we're sitting there talking, I'm looking, and this tall being is standing beside him. And you know, I still think, well, is it the light that's forming something, you know, like clouds. You can see designs in clouds, etc. Is my mind playing tricks? And finally, Paul looked at me. He said, something seems to be bothering you. And I said, yes, I have this vivid imagination, and I see this tall man beside you, and he's barefooted, and he's smiling. I said, wow, my imagination is going rampant tonight. And he laughed, and he said, no, that's Rebbe Zartaris, and if he bothers you, I'll send him away. So this was not a thought form. It was actually, he came by his own volition, and we got a big charge out of that.
If we're able to heal the small thing, or you're able to do any kind of mind over matter thing, which is a whole other series of shows, and you're able to control your blood flow, then why do we age at all? Why do we have to keep popping in and out and going through all this bother of starting over again?
Because there were so many, many, many people that have this concept. It's taken president, all of this will change. Our lifespan should, I can get into the metaphysical, we're in and out of our body on a continuing basis. And this can go on for 20 or 30 hours, honey, if I get into all of the things that I have experienced and observed and learned.
We can't end our time together on a cliffhanger like that without me inviting you back. We have to do this again.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul Highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Yeah, man. We all love to hear the good news, so we all should rush to hear the good news. But we can just find the good news.
NSPS, NSPS, news for the soul at the very best. NSPS, NSPS, news for the soul at the very best. NSPS, NSPS, news for the soul at the very best.
Yeah, man, just log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Can you hear me?
We are a life-changing talk radio. We give you good news to keep you on the go. And you can also share the good news, you know. And that's the way we keep in the flow. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We not go put none of the negative in there. We not go put none of the negative in there. NSPS, NSPS, news for the soul at the very best. NSPS, NSPS, news for the soul at the very best.
Log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Every time, come here, good news, share the good news. And we all feeling good for the good news.
The News for the Soul Radio Network airs daily, and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And we love News for the Soul!
I'm feeling enormous energy around this show. Just enormous, enormous. I really have to hand it to you, Nicole. You have created sort of a niche of amazing, amazing connections. It's just like the angels and the devatas that are like attracted to News for the Soul is amazing. Like, this is what's getting, it's some angel telling somebody, okay, listen, get on this show, listen to this program, even not my program, whatever program you've got on. It's really amazing.
Hard to believe it's 17 years since there in Vancouver, and you were sitting there in class, and you were using remote viewing, and I think I said to you that you were going to be a radio talk show host or something along those lines. It wasn't really a prediction. It was just a kind of a sense of who you were and what you were doing and the direction you were going, and wow, voila, and there you were.
And still going.
But it's amazing. Look at what you've done with it. I just wanted to say I'm very proud of you for what you've accomplished, for just the format, to the assemblage of wonderful people, great minds, and people who are working to serve humanity and do the things that they do. I've been looking through your list of callers and interviewees, and you just do a tremendous job. I'm so proud of you. I really am. And I'm proud of all the people that support you and follow you and do what they do, and just keep doing that for this wonderful woman. It's so important, because there are not a lot of really high quality message portals that are out there where messengers get to come in and say what they want to say in this format. So it's because of your support of her that she's able to continue doing that. So please step that up and continue doing it. And I just want to do it more. I mean, I feel good being here and being with you. I always do when I'm talking with you. So I think we just need to keep doing this more.
Yes, we love News for the Soul.
Hello, everybody. This is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Enfoldment. This is News for the Soul.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening
Ready.
To News
it's
for the Soul.
It's time for News for the Soul. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Join us as we celebrate 11 years of empowerment broadcasts, becoming the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google, AOL, MSN, YouTube, and more, and home to the largest, totally free transformational audio library in the world, all found at newsofthesoul.com. And now, here's your host and the founder of News of the Soul, the one they're calling the Oprah of the Internet, Nicole Whitney.
Good afternoon. We're live again. I'm Nicole Whitney, and this is News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's especially unexplained today because, well, we're going to be explaining it. Well, I won't be, but physicist Tom Campbell will be. He's my guest this hour, this day, and we're going to have some fun live on the air, hopefully. Physicist Tom Campbell, author of the great book trilogy, My Big Toe, as in T-O-E, as in theory of everything. And let's get started. He is one of our special regulars. Let's see if Tom Campbell's on the line and ready to start our always intriguing discussions. Tom, are you there?
I'm here, Nicole.
Oh, Tom, welcome back to News for the Soul. It's been a while since we've talked.
Yeah, it's great to be here. We're going to have fun tonight, I think.
I think so. Well, we always do. And so are you finding that people are getting what you're talking about? Are they getting it? Are they there? Are they really enthusiastically awakening? Are you seeing a change?
Well, you know, you can get this on a lot of different levels, and
mm-hmm.
people get it on the level at which they kind of are capable of getting it at the time, and that's a lot of different levels. So everybody doesn't get it in the same way. It depends on the individual and where they are in their understanding of the bigger picture, the beliefs they have, the expectations, the investment they have in things being a certain way. A lot of beliefs get broken when you get into my work. There's many things about it that require you to discard old beliefs and see things in a bigger, broader pattern. So, yes, people are getting it, but exactly how they're getting it and at what level, that's really hard to tell. Some of them get it almost the whole way, and most get it about halfway, and there's a fair amount that just get it a little bit. But we're making progress. Yes, it gets better. The more people get exposed to it, you know, the more they understand. I find people tell me all the time that, I read your book the first time and thought I understood all of it. And then about 3 months later, I read it again and didn't think I'd ever seen it before. You know, it's like I was reading it for the first time. And
mm-hmm.
and then they'll read it a third time and say, well, gee, there was so much in it on the third time that I never got the first two times. That's because every time you read it, you grow some, you learn some, you change, you're a different person. You take some time to integrate that. And then when you read it again, gosh, there's all kinds of things there that just didn't seem to be there before. So, yes, people are getting it, but as they will.
And I'm curious if you're able to, if anyone's ever asked you this, if you can sum up the true nature of what you've discovered about our reality, our world, our existence in, you know, just a few sentences.
Well, how about in three words or less? That would be good.
Okay.
I was asked this in Austin, a radio station. The person there said, well, you know, Einstein summed up all of his, understanding in just, E equals MC squared. Do you have anything that's that succinct, that you can share with us? And I thought about it for a moment, and basically to boil it down to the fewest words is reality is information. Reality is information, and consciousness is reality. So that's kind of the heart of it.
So what does that really mean?
Well, what that means is that, that has a lot of logical, you follow that logically and you end up with a lot of conclusions. One is that this reality that we are in is a virtual reality. We're living in a virtual life. This physical reality is not primary and it's not fundamental. Consciousness is the fundamental reality. And consciousness is information, and it's digital. The simplest expression of information is a bit, an on or an off, a one or a zero. And the simplest form of bits is binary. So if we get down to the very simplest description that we can of reality, we find it's information. When I look at our reality and this physical reality, it's just digital information, and we all know that because what is it? It's our senses, right? It's light. Well, the light comes into our eyes, gets focused on the retina, and then what happens? It gets turned into digital information. It gets turned into little discrete electrical signals. Discrete, that's what I mean by digital. Those electrical signals then move along the nervous system. You get neurons that move, and you get patterns of neurons. So that information that was, what we think's real, what we're looking at, what we see, as soon as it gets to our bodies, basically, it gets converted into digital information. Now, same with the smell and hearing and all of the senses we have, which basically define our reality. That's how we see that this world is real. We see it through our senses, and that sense data, as soon as it gets to us, is all turned into digital information. So thinking that reality is digital information shouldn't be that large a conceptual jump. Now, if you could, have a virtual reality game or a virtual reality creator, we have these things. Before pilots fly real planes, they get in simulators and they fly pretend planes. And these simulators are very realistic, so they can run these pilots through all sorts of emergency procedures that you would never want to do in a real plane, like you're at 10,000 feet and your engines quit. Now, you don't want to do that in a real plane because not only might you kill yourself, but you might destroy a $200 million plane. So they do all that sort of thing in simulators. A simulator is just a virtual reality generator. But now think if we had a virtual reality generator that could put little electrical pulses into our optic nerve and into our auditory nerves and so on, so that we would see and hear and smell and touch things. It would just put those signals into our nervous system, just like those signals get in there from our senses. Could we tell the difference? No. It would create the same reality we have here. So how can you tell the difference between a virtual reality that's putting digital information into your nervous system as opposed to your senses putting digital information into your nervous system? Well, you can't. There is no difference. So that gets us into the conclusion that, Descartes came to this conclusion, a century or so ago with the I think, therefore I am. Well, he started with the idea, what can we depend on? What do we know for sure? And he went through all the obvious things and finally ended up with the conclusion that the only thing you really know for sure is that you're conscious. Think, therefore you am. That's kind of the summation.
So if everything is information, everything is coming to us as information, what are we?
What are we? We are individuated units of consciousness. We are a little subset, a little clump, a little organization of consciousness, and that means we are data. We have data that represents all of the things that we've ever seen, heard, smelled, and not only this lifetime, but any other lifetime. So all of our experience is with data. Now, we have memory, data storage. We have feedback loops so that we can learn. We can look at the data coming in and process on it and then decide whether our free will actions that were taken based on that data were good ones or not good ones, and then we can change them. So it's a self-modifying subset of information is what we are as individuals. All of our history, all of our experiences are all there. They make up us. So we're a subset of information. And what we're doing here, our point, is to grow, you know, to grow up, to evolve. Consciousness, this larger consciousness system that has all these individuated consciousnesses in it that are just a part of that system, you know, we're all part of the one. We're all netted together in this consciousness network. And the point is to evolve. This is a real finite system. It's evolving too. It's not just that we're evolving, but the whole consciousness system is evolving. We're part of a living, growing, evolving thing here. And in the books, I describe this in terms of entropy. Entropy is a measure of disorder, a measure of an ability to have an effect. And you increase your ability to have an effect by growing up, by learning, by growing, by becoming more spiritual, having a higher quality of consciousness. You, all these things amount to the same thing. And you do that by decreasing the entropy of your own subset, which means you organize the bits at your disposal into a more profitable configuration. So that's kind of the big picture of consciousness, reality, and who and what we are, and you know what we're all about. We're about growing up, about becoming love. Now, what's love? Love is the nature of a low entropy consciousness. So as we grow, as we become more spiritual, as we evolve and increase the quality of our consciousness, we become more love-like. Not that we become more loving. We do that too. But we as a individual entity just express love as our entropy decreases, as we become more, more evolved as beings. So is that a whole lot? Have I just kind of overdone it here?
No, it's a perfect introduction for what we're planning today.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
We're talking to Tom Campbell, physicist and author of My Big Toe Trilogy, Theory of Everything, and you're not going to want to miss anything that happens today. We're going to see if we can experiment with what we are. Okay, so tell me about, let's get into the topic of the, you know, we discussed teleporting and limits of what you could do once you became aware of what made
there. All right, I kind of have a few things planned today. One, I wanted to do a little audience participation, if you think that's good. We'll get your audience involved in this.
I think that's excellent. Yeah, let's
and
do it.
What I'd like to do is teach your audience how to diagnose illness and then how to heal that illness.
Okay.
A little experiment worked up for that. Then I thought we'd do a little remote viewing with the audience. And then at the end, I know this is one of your heart sets. It's been since we first talked, I think, a year or two ago, this teleportation experiment. So we're going to do that as well. So I thought we could do all of those. I think we have time to do them all and still talk a little bit about what it all means and, you know, how it works. And my point in doing these experiments isn't to, you know, wow anybody with the experiments. That's not it. The experiments may or may not work. The point is that they will be good learning points. You'll learn a lot, and it will give your audience a way of doing their own experiments. Once we go through this process, they'll see how they can repeat this process many times and collect their own evidence. So this will give them something, some way that they can start on their own process of experiencing the larger reality. And the diagnosing and healing, we're actually going to do a little time shifting as well, and the remote viewing. These things are not as hard to do as most people think. We tend to make them hard to do by our beliefs and our expectations. And once we get ourselves out of the way, once we can get that intellect to be quiet, and once we get ourselves out of the way and get our beliefs down and our fears down, then all this stuff really is not hard. It's natural. It's as natural as breathing. You basically just have to get out of the way. And what does all this have to do with what we started with about, you know, reality is information and so on? Well, once you understand the basic nature of reality, then you understand how all these paranormal things work. You understand, what's going on and how you can interact with them. You understand what your point is. You're able to visit, go traveling in this larger reality. It just opens up a whole lot of things. And this view of consciousness being the fundamental reality, it unifies physics, because what comes out of this, now we're not going to get into that kind of detail, but part of what comes out of this is an explanation of quantum mechanics, an explanation of the double slit experiment, which scientists, your mainstream scientists, still scratching their heads about that. Well, a logical explanation of why that is, why that has to be the way it is, comes right out of this same theory. So it's integrating metaphysics and physics. It will explain theology and, to some extent, psychology. And things just tend to fall into place. People who have read, Eastern mysticism for years, and then after they read the My Big Toe, suddenly it all makes sense to them, because it comes into a context, a logical context, that they can understand it. It's not quite so much poetry and description as it is logic and science. So it is a kind of a, it's a theory of everything, and it has to explain everything, and that means the normal as well as the paranormal, the metaphysical as well as the physical. So that's mm-hmm. the basis where we are, and since we started with the theory, I just have one little thing I'll add to it, and then if you don't mind, we'll just get right into the audience participation.
It's perfect.
Start with that. Okay. Well, the one, since we started with the theory, we said that. Consciousness is information. Consciousness is a fundamental reality. We should also say that everybody's reality is individual. You are an individual person with an individual consciousness, and your reality is individual. Okay, information must be interpreted, and that interpretation is personal and subjective. It has to be both, because this is your interpretation from your consciousness. So everything that makes up our reality really has to be personal and subjective. Okay, the concept of objectivity that we talk about here in our physical reality is a hallucination. It's an approximation. There is no objective reality. Well, why do we think this physical reality is objective? And we say, well, you have to do objective science and you need to get objective results. Well, if it's all information, and as I mentioned, it's the information you take through your senses, which turns into digital information in your brain and in your nervous system, and we have to interpret that information, then what's objective about it? It's subjective because we have to interpret it. Why do we think it's objective? Because we all tend to interpret it about the same way. And why do we do that? Well, we do that because our sensory apparatus, our sight and hearing and so on, between people is all very similar. We all hear about the same things. We all see about the same things. So we all agree on what we see and hear, because we're all taking in basically the same data. So that tends to make the world look very consistent and objective. But actually, we know that's not true. If you have five people standing on the same street corner and they observe an accident, you'll get five different accident reports. That's kind of infamous, that witnesses differ who witness the very same thing. And that's because we all interpret what we witness. There are facts, yes, but each individual lives in their own reality and interprets that reality in a way that's based on their own history, their own database. What they've experienced is how you have to interpret that. So if we get into a realm where we're not all sensing in the same way, like a realm where we're communicating telepathically, where we're just sharing data back and forth, it's not through our senses, it's just chunks of data like paragraphs and chapters at a time, well, then we don't all interpret it the same way. So that's why here in the physical, it seems like everything's buttoned down and very tight, because we all interpret mostly what we see the same way. Now, what if we're in different cultures? If we're in different cultures, we can interpret things very, very differently. But if we're in the same culture, then we all pretty much agree. Now, how do we describe these things that we see? When we are interpreting this information that we see with our eyes, we interpret it in terms of metaphors and symbols. Language is just metaphors and symbols. Okay, so I want to get that kind of basic understanding down, that metaphors and symbols are an imperfect process. They're not objective, and they are subjective. So when we start doing these diagnosing and healing, everybody will have their own view of it, and that's as it should be. There is no one right answer. There's a lot of different people who are observing and interpreting in their own way. But we can develop ways of doing this that make us all effective, and that's what we're gonna do next. Okay?
Okay. So where do we start?
Well, let's start. I hope we have a bunch of people out there who are listening, who have a way that they can work with us. You know, what we're going to be doing now is going to require you to, let's do diagnosing first. You should find a quiet spot where you can still hear this broadcast. You don't have to meditate. That's not necessary that you go into a meditation state. It is necessary that you aren't bothered by things and you're not doing something. So if you happen to be preparing a meal, then that's not going to work too well, because that's going to be distracting to you. But if you can sit down someplace and close your eyes, that helps. Closing the eyes just shuts out a lot of data that competes for your attention. Now, if you're out there driving a car, please don't shut your eyes. You know, that would be a bad thing to do. So for those of you who can safely find a quiet spot and kind of close your eyes, then let's go ahead with those and see what we can do. First of all, attitude is very important. Okay, no expectations, no beliefs, just do it and observe. Okay? You know, that's important. No judgments, no second guessing, no analyzing, no trying to listen to what I'm saying and try to guess at the right answer. We all have this sense. I think we pick it up in kindergarten and all the way through college. We pick up this idea that we need to get the right answer. You know, we get points for getting the right answer. So as you hear information, you hear data, everybody immediately starts processing and guessing at where's this going, what's the right answer, you know, what am I supposed to get? And that just gets in the way and interferes it. That will destroy the process. So no expectations, no beliefs, just do it. I'm going to give you instructions. Just do it and observe what happens. There's no, there's nothing in particular that you should expect. I'm not going to give you enough information that you could guess anyway. So if you think you could guess, you're just going to confuse yourself. Okay, now, to begin with, imagine a vanilla or white gingerbread cookie. Can you see that in your mind, this gingerbread cookie? Okay, now you don't need to see it in high resolution. This is not a photograph. Just see it or feel it, just kind of know it's there. So what you're seeing is kind of a humanoid form. It's got a head, a neck, an upper body, arms, hands, lower body, legs, feet, and that's about it. It doesn't have a little happy face on it. You know, it doesn't have little eyes or anything. It's just a humanoid outline figure. So just see that and see it as a light vanilla gingerbread cookie kind of thing. Okay? Now, let it go to where you're not seeing it. All right, now bring it back. See it again. Vague is okay. Okay, now, I just want you to kind of get used to being able to see that that humanoid outline when you want to. So let it go again. Let that go. So now it's just blank. You're not looking at anything. Okay, now, I want you to intend. Intent is very important in this process. I want you to intend that this humanoid shape is my friend Dan. Okay? And it's my friend Dan today. Right now as Dan is today. But just that's an intention. See, all right? Let's bring that humanoid shape back up again and say, now this humanoid shape represents Dan. Tom's friend Dan. Now that's all you need to know. You don't need to know. You don't have to have a lock of his hair or see his picture or all that stuff is unnecessary. It's just Tom's friend Dan will do, because that is a unique address. Okay, now, the next thing I want you to intend is that anything or any area that's not healthy or fit is dark. And the more unhealthy it is, the darker it is. Okay, now this dark stuff, if there's anything in Dan that's unhealthy, the dark stuff should contrast pretty well with the light, healthy background of this vanilla cookie image. Okay, so we have a kind of a white cookie, and we're intending that this cookie represents Dan's health, and we're intending that if there's anything about Dan's health that isn't really good, we will see that as dark color on this white cookie background. All right, now let's look at Dan the Cookie Man and see if you see any dark spots. Okay, now just kind of scan the cookie. Do you see any dark spots? Do you see, you know, look at the head, look at the neck, look at the upper body, look at the arms, look at the hands, look at the lower body, look at the legs, look at the feet. Okay, now I'm taking you through this quickly, but that's all right. Quicker is better. Now remember what you saw. Okay, you looked at the cookie, you looked at all the parts of the body, and it was white. Anything that was wrong with Dan, you saw in dark. Now, if it's just, let's say Dan just had a head cold, you'd probably see kind of just a cloudy light gray around the head. If Dan had a tumor somewhere, then you would see probably like a lump of coal. So that's what I mean by various shades of black. All right. Now, we're going to do one more thing that's going to teach you something, and that is let's switch the colors. Okay, we're going to switch black and white. Now look at Dan again, but now intend that anything that is good and healthy about Dan is black. So now you're looking at a black cookie, and anything that is healthy about Dan is white. So you should see a bright white spot, like a white light showing up on any parts of his body. You know, again, we want to look at the, you know, the head, the upper body, the arms, the hands, the fingers, the lower body, the legs, okay, the feet, all of Dan. We just scan all over this cookie and see, and it's a black cookie now, and anything that is healthy is black, and anything that's going to be unhealthy we see as a spot of white. Now, it really doesn't make any difference whether we do black on white or white on black. It's our intent that matters. Okay, now I'm going to give you just a few seconds to kind of catch up. I've been talking quickly. So go ahead and do those things that I've told you. Kind of look at it and check it and make sure you get the same answer twice and three times. Okay? Now, the next thing we want to do is let's time shift. Okay? Now, you're looking at Dan the Cookie Man and intend that this cookie now represents Dan's health energy on January the 7th. That's a couple of weeks ago. January the 7th, about 2.5 weeks ago. So now look again. Do the same thing that we always did. You can intend again, if you like, that the white is healthy and good and the dark is unhealthy. That's more typical, but you can switch that. You just have to make sure your intention is clear. Don't confuse yourself that you go in and look and you haven't really intended which way it is. Purposely intend how you want the colors to, what do you want the colors to represent. Say Dan now is 2.5 weeks ago on January the 7th. Now look at him again and see if there's any difference. Do you see any difference in Dan? Head, neck, upper body, arms, hands, fingers, lower body, legs, feet, toes. What you get. Okay, now switch back with your intent to intend that Dan is again, you're looking at energy of Dan's that represents the way he is today. Look at that. See any differences? Look back at the way he was on the January the 7th. See if you can tell any differences. Okay, now I give you just about another 20 seconds or so just to kind of do this on your own. I've been going a little fast. So just work this in your mind now while you're sitting there. No guessing. No intellect. Just look and observe. Now, if you don't see and you feel instead, that's fine. You can feel the light, feel the dark. Feel the shape. Feeling is good, as well as seeing. All right. Now, I think everybody's done that. That is diagnosing, and that's really all you need to do to diagnose. And you can diagnose people. You need to practice. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit later just exactly, you know, what Dan's problem is, and you'll see whether or not you got it right or not. But for now, just, you know, just kind of bear with me. And we've now diagnosed Dan. You can find, go talk to people, a friend of yours, and say, friend of mine, do you know somebody who has an illness? And if you do, don't tell me what it is, but just write their first name down and give it to me and let me practice this. If you practice this 50 times before you start getting judgmental, you will begin to see sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, what that difference is, what your mindset was like, how focused were you. You'll get better at it. You maybe not be too good at it your first try, but you can get to where you can do this and are right 80-90% of the time if you practice. Okay, I take it everybody's probably caught up to me. Now, let's heal Dan. So you've learned how to diagnose, and it has to do with your intent. Now, let's look at how to heal Dan. Okay, so let's all use the same, so we don't confuse ourselves, let's all use the same intention that light is good and dark is unhealthy. So let's use that model. Okay, so let's look at Dan as represented by the cookie humanoid shape. So that cookie now represents Dan's health energy. Okay, now remember where you saw the dark areas. Look at those dark areas, if you found any, and intend for those dark spots to turn white. Just intend, just look at them and see that they turn white. If you will, make them turn white. Make them turn bright white. Very, very bright white. Just so, a white so bright that it's hard for you to actually look at it. You have to squint because it's so bright. Now, you can just make it turn bright like that, or you can use tools. You can make up tools. All tools are is things that help you focus your intent. So you can make a laser tool, something that shines out a bright beam of intense light, and you can shine that on the dark spots. The light is a tool. It's not anything fundamental. You can, use a torch and burn that dark spot. You can use a vacuum cleaner and, you know, suck up that black spot. Do all kinds of things. But those are just